thank you, Ifani. No matter, developing that clarity about who your target audience is the other piece, the other side of the coin. It's not just what you can provide, but it's who can you speak to? Who is your ideal person that you want to work with? Given that the chances are you're not going to, at least in this year, save every human being on the face of the planet in one fell swoop, and that we need to start somewhere and then expand and improve and scale up and all that sort of stuff. Do you begin by speaking to the most difficult ones who don't even understand or get anything that you're talking about, or do you speak to ones who really are aligned with you? And that's obvious. But when you get down to, you know, even as you were working on your simple X factor pitch yesterday, I think you began to see how, yeah, you've kind of got an idea in your mind, but then how do you narrow them down? And how do you find them? And what is it in their experience that you can speak to that can catch their attention? What are their pain points that you can solve? Not just what are their pain points, but what are their pain points that you can solve in a unique way? And are you clear about your uniqueness, not just in your head, but can you then turn it into words that then when you speak to somebody, they get it? And again, that's where testing it out with people and by having your sentence or your variety of sentences that you can say, when you engage people, when they say, what is it that you do? And you respond, you can see through their responses. If you know they're pretty much the right group, right person, you can see by their response, whether they go, do they lean in? Do they say, yeah, tell me more. Are you getting that kind of response when they are what you think is your target market? If you are, you're starting to get the words down. And all of these things become critical as you begin your outreach, because your outreach, I don't care whether you're at the UN, whether you're a nonprofit, whether you're a for-profit, whatever, you are going to be involved in outreach, in marketing, in sales. You're selling ideas, you're selling concepts, you're selling something. You're selling yourself. And I don't like to use the term selling because it's so loaded with all kinds of other things. But what you're working to do is to engage with others so that you can be involved in their life and help change their life as a social entrepreneur, as a social change leader. And that process of communications, of outreach and engagement, people have, you know, in the business world have given it those simple names. But in the end, it's person-to-person relationships. It's communicating ideas. It's communicating who you are. But as we've gone through, it's helping people have that experience, that feeling when they are around you. So how do you begin that process? And how do you start to communicate to them that you have something that is unique and that is what they're looking for? And if that's something, if the person in front of you is looking for that, then you're being able to help them with that. That is a match made in heaven, so to speak. That's what business, enterprise, entrepreneurialism, you know, that's how we engage and work and connect and really help get out there and make a difference in the world. It's through these very practical ways of living and working and doing our business of outreach, of connection, and then of bringing people on that journey, on that stakeholder journey. So the master plan, as I have, and it's just pretty simple in a way, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop what I have in the, you know, and I put at the top of my page. What did I put in the top of my page? I'm just going to tell you, and then I'm going to take a minute to drop it into the page. Then what I want you to do is I'm going to give you just a really short space of time but I still want to come back around to our stakeholders again. And then I will also drop into the stakeholder, into the thing. I'll drop the master plan in, and then I'll drop in that stakeholder journey document. Do you remember, Grace and Ifani? It was lots of words and arrows on it and whatever else, but that's just informational. But then what I want you to do, but let me take a couple of minutes to get these to you, and then I'll tell you what I want you to do. So give me a moment here while I pull up these documents. One pager. And there's that. I will save that. I will put this file. Pager, where is it? Desktop. Here comes the one pager. Next, I have to find where I hid the other file. I didn't really hide it, it's just I've got so many files. Okay, I might have to go into the other area. I can't remember the name of that file. Stakeholder. Huh. I'm going to have to take a moment to find that other. So while you are, okay, so you've got that document, you're able to get the one pager, right? So that's just a way of saying, okay, here are some of the most essential things right on one page. And I put at the top, you know, that of course you've got to have all these other things. Part of your responsibility is to have the highest quality business, to provide exceptional service, to always deliver more than you could ever expect to get from people, so that you know that your standards are immaculate. You do more rather than less. You don't give people, you know, just a little bit. You give them more. And I, you know, I hope that has been your experience with me, that I've given you. That's what I want you. I want you to have that experience of this is a lot for what. You know, for what you put in, that's my goal and objective. But what I want you to spend 3 minutes, no, I think you only probably need about 1 to 2 minutes, and I'll get you going on that. I want you to write out your list of stakeholders, just brainstorm all your stakeholders that you have. And then I want you to prioritize them. Just put 1, 2, 3, 4. Maybe some of them are about equal priority. but then to prioritize them. Just on, and then drop that list, you know, so if you on a piece of paper or in a text document, just put, you know, maybe board members are your number one, I don't know, and put parentheses one. Once you've got that little list, just drop it in the chat box. And I'll give you a couple of minutes to do that. You might need 3 minutes to think of them and then to prioritize. And I'll look for that other document. Okay. I've got turn off that music. Let me, I'm still just trying to turn this into a PDF. Let me see where I'm going to send that as, save as a PDF, where I'm going to put that just on the, there we go, for now. And here comes that, I think that other document is going to come right now from, there we go. So there's a PDF in that, in the chat now. So did everybody get a list of their stakeholders and prioritized? I can't see any in the chat. Or do you want to just read them out to me? Anybody got their stakeholders? Didn't you want to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I put as my stakeholders, my possible, it was like very, very detailed, but in general, one mm-hmm. was my possible clients, my potential mm-hmm. clients, my allies.
And allies in terms of
foundations, other maybe residue, how do you like a company that handles trash correctly and recycling and that?
Yeah.
And local companies, like yep. local products. Then I also put my like providers of service. Like people that work for me, like someone who does my social media or my accounting and mentors.
Like they would be more your team members in your organization.
Yeah, in a way. But in my mind, it was very obvious to put my potential customers first. But when I wrote them down, I put my allies first.
Mm.
I prioritize them because like I can keep finding new customers, but I need my allies in order to work, to function properly. So it was first my allies, then my clients, then my team, and then my mentors.
Great. And Grace, I'm just going around the screen here.
Sure. I put quite a few. I don't really know how to prioritize them because they're all pretty high priority. But it's the co-founders of WJPI, the founders group. Basically, the co-founders of WJPI have a number of different NGOs in which they've co-founded, two of which are UN in consultative status with the United Nations, and one is getting their consultative status right now, amongst other organizations. So all of those, that's the founders group. The third is the WJPI board of directors. Fourth is interns and volunteers. Fifth is the UN system and NGO working groups, like contacts there. Next is the WJPI regional, national, and local chapters, beneficiaries, and contacts. Then donors, then UN office staff.
Okay, so then, and you, in terms of what you would consider your priority stakeholder group at the moment, just in terms of, say, you know, picking, for example, your 7-year plan. Just pick one. And, you know, this is not absolute and this is not, you know, you're not making any cosmic decisions here. It's just for the next exercise that I want you to pick one.
Sure.
So I'm just trying to, it's good just to pick one that's practical for you to work with, that's something that you might want to be starting to think about anyway.
Okay, well, that's UN office staff, just because that's the one that I have
Okay. So start there. You know, I mean, many times, especially when you're starting to get your hands around this stuff, it's good to start with something that you're not biting off too much all in one go. So it's good to start by practicing with the, you know, maybe some of the easier places where you're going to have to be doing something anyway, and where it's good to get started and beginning to exercise these muscles a little bit. Yeah. Okay, Fernanda.
Okay, for me, first I wrote down my team members, then young women, social programs for women or students, mm-hmm. Companies and foundations, mm-hmm. and finally local activists.
Cool. Very good. So you've identified those, and then, you know, as you move through, as each of you move through and focus on there, they're like your general groups. Each of you have general groups, and then like even community organizations and things like that. Then you'll start, and according to your X factor, you'll start and focus in terms of those who are local community actors, which ones are the ones that you're going to outreach first. So then that becomes in terms of the value of doing the work with your local community actors. That's where you can think down the road, where do I want to build my social capital at the community level? That's not the personal level. It's not the one-on-one kind of customer or beneficiary level, but then that's where, you know, you're building out, you're at the, you know, one of those onion cells, you're building out your levels of impact and influence. Then you will get to the stage of thinking about your social capital and who you want to connect with and work with and partner with. But it's not the first place you usually begin with, but you will get there. And then you'll start, once you get into that area, then you start and get strategic about who you start and spend your time with there. And again, that's where you naturally will tend to align your X factor. Those either that can augment your work uniquely, that you know that in your work, you oftentimes need this kind of other partner with you to have more impact when you go to, for example, a higher level governmental leader. If you're trying to make a change in social policy of some kind, then you'll need to get you look for slightly different partners than you would if you're looking to do a common program together, maybe, or even some programs you want to have that you don't want to have somebody doing exactly the same thing as you, or you don't mind that they're doing exactly the same thing as you. Won't be exactly the same, but close enough, but that can augment what you're doing. So you begin to look at all of your stakeholders that way. Thank you. Any funny?
Okay, in terms of hierarchy of priority, my coordinators and volunteers, because they're the ones who will
probably
administer the functions. Then the beneficiaries, which are the local communities that involve the youth, the women, and also the children, basically.
Right.
Then down there we have board of directors, board members and partner or collaborating partners. Then after that, we have donors and program sponsors. The reason donors and program sponsors in last is at least if we do have the coordinators, we can pretty much do some of the things we can do with what we have while we're seeking funding. If we start funding first, we may not be address those programs while we're working on those funding. So, that's pretty much the driving factor.
Good. So now that you've, what I want each one of you to do now in the next 3 minutes is to pick that one stakeholder. Then I want you to think about the journey that a stakeholder takes from when they first encounter your organization. Just say they first encounter you, and in theory, you've said something like, I help young women find their real values so that they can go out into their lives and careers to emboldened, empowered, and enriched, and with the courage to make the change in the world. I don't know what it is that you that you want to do, but so you come across a person who is interested. I want you to think about what parts of your organization, what programs do you have? What programs might you not have that you might need? And they could be as simple as, they may not be a program, they might be a discussion that you need to have with somebody that would help them see, number one, that you do have a solution to their need, their interest, their curiosity. What kind of a discussion or a program or content would they need to be then exposed to see that your approach is unique enough, differentiated enough from others, that they would choose you over another organization, another women's organization, another company that helps promote, offsets the carbon footprints of the entertainment industry. I don't know whether there is anybody else out there. That may be your one key differentiating factor, and you're going to be able to make sure that the entertainers that you're helping to promote and work with still also get the other exposure that they want. And then what kind of call to action would you give them? These are actually really big questions, and to give you 3 minutes is unfair. I wanted you to just even take for a moment a little bit of a thought about how would you move them from encountering you along that journey and path to recognizing that, oh, you are an organization, a person, organization that I might be interested in, to, oh, you've got some really neat stuff that I haven't seen anywhere else. So what are some of those things? Oh, what are you doing in your programs to invite them to decide to join you? Are you asking them to join you? And then what kind of an experience would they need to have to become an all-in behind you, an all-in supporter of your organization? Because whether you think about it or not, that's the journey that a person is going to have to take in order to come from not knowing you to being your absolute supporting, committed person. So start to think about this is like mapping out the milestones of the stakeholder journey that you will be taking them through one way or another. And if you're not doing it intentionally, then if you haven't set it up intentionally, maybe you've already got systems in place that effectively do that. Maybe. But if not, and they might be as simple as, this first night of the month, we have this briefing on what we do and a mixer that has, people get exposed to the kinds of work that we do. And then on the second week of the month, you have something where for those people who are more interested in in Grace's case, and you know, in working at the UN, and how you can get them involved as interns or as involved in committees, and then how they would then go through the process of becoming even more in-depth trained about the UN so they could become a real advocate for your organization in that environment, to where, you know, so you can see how you actually need to have a progression for them in place. This is part of your responsibility for people in your business. This is part of your business responsibility for. As they walk through this, you can help them be, you can help them as individuals, you can help with your accountability to them as participants in that journey, but your responsibility in the beginning is to at least have a pathway for them to travel to becoming committed supporters of your organization. So I'll give you a few minutes, because this is, you're way not going to have it all knocked out and knocked down, but and there are many pieces to all of this, and to do this well, and being able to do it in this time of COVID and to do this kind of stuff online is a different way of somehow doing this, and that's a possibility too. But at least begin by thinking about what are some of those milestones in the journey from interested to committed. Sorry about that. It's meant to be background music, not knock your socks off music. Although maybe I need to wake you up. I can see Grace yawning. That PDF file of the stakeholder journey may be useful just to help you think this through. Okay, so our 3 minutes are about up. Do you want more time or are you good for this part? You figured it all out? What time are you good? Okay. So, could you see an arc in the line that you can take people through? Could you identify key points that of that journey for that particular stakeholder group? Key either information, key understanding that they would need, key moments where events where or opportunities where they would be given the opportunity to make a choice about participating. Just any kind of feedback on this as a thought experiment, as a way for you to think something through. Easy, difficult.
Okay. Well, I think I probably go first. As I peruse through the whole thing, trying to see what makes us unique. Why would people want to join our program, and what sets us apart from the others? And with little knowledge I have, having looked at the involvement of both civil society organizations and the NGOs in Nigeria and in other parts of Africa, basically they come in with a fire, with a great approach of, okay, let's put out the fire. And most of the intention or interest is to collect data, actually to improve on the experiences. So they give people this notion that an NGO comes in to bring us fish and not actually to teach them how to fish, and look at them as charity cases. It's not based on what they want, it's based on what the NGO is offering.
Right.
So what makes us unique is we are basically focused on what the people need and want, and then meet them where they are, help them to get from where they are to where they want to be, giving them the tools and the resources to get there, not necessarily solving the problems for them, but giving them the tools to solve their own problems. And it's individualized, done with dignity, not because they're a charity case. For example, the young man who has a physical challenge and had the wheelchair, basically what he wanted was a comfortable wheelchair, pretty much. However, there are other things too, what he may need. We have to meet him where he is now. So we are following up on him. I've talked to a coordinator to go back, visit with him, find out exactly what he wants. That would help him if tomorrow the wheelchair is broken that he has, he'll be able to afford to repair it, rather than having to wait for somebody where he doesn't know where they will come from to come in. And if that person doesn't come, then he still suffers that consequence. So is now I share with them, he's not a charity case. Mm-hmm. He has the dignity, he has the right, he has to be shown respect and love. So we are not trying to solve his problem because we have sympathy for him, or because we have self-respect for him, and also to maintain his dignity. So how are we going to extend his dignity? It's by giving him the tools to be able to afford the repairs next time, so he wouldn't have to wait for somebody and other people do that. So that's the uniqueness of our program that others don't bring into the whole thing. Now, the other aspect,
One moment there. So then one of the milestones there that you're talking about in this journey is the person who is there working with this young man in the wheelchair, that he is actually going in there and finding out from him, not just the obvious thing of new wheelchair, but what are some of the ways that he could even tap into his community resources? Or even is it just even the fact that you're having your volunteer or coordinator have this kind of discussion with that young man rather than just, oh, you need a wheelchair, here it is, bye. So you've got kind of two types of potential milestones there. One is that you have a more meaningful, in-depth conversation with the person to find out what they really want beyond the wheelchair.
Right. Yes.
And what other resources are there in his community that he might not have even thought about?
Correct. Yes. So that we can point him to that resources and he'll be able to tap that resource, whether being a part of a group that they can advocate and try to change policies and all those things, you know, of the local resources that are there that nobody he doesn't know about because he's not asking and bringing them into contact with him. So that's what makes our program, our organization, because it's based on human capital. It's not based on collecting data,
right, all
those things. So it's like we have a sustainable plan, consistent, you know, maybe a 1 year, 2 years plan to follow and also see it through. It's not, okay, well, we got this gone, we've got our data, we have X amount of people who are suffering from this, and then we'll move to the next thing. And, you know, again, also we're trying to bring some kind of credibility and dignity and respect for CSOs and NGOs also, because the culture of CSOs and NGOs, the reputation is pretty much down. Where politicians have now hijacked it for their own purpose and do all kinds of other things, which is, I'm sorry to mention this, James, which is one of the problems that James
is
encountering, and he's not making much headway because people see it as a political program. Okay, they got something, they're giving you something, so where's ours? So it's really, you know, creating difficulties for him to penetrate the community. So we're trying to review that and just making it unique and simple.
That's right. So then in this case, as a for instance, then you've got your coordinator who would then go in and speak more in depth with that the person, find out their needs, connect with the people in the community. What are some of the other, connect with people in the community there who may be resources for that kind of, you know, even intra-community support?
Network, yes. Mm-hmm.
So then you're expanding the network there and the connections of your organization there. And then what would be the next step there? To either, do you have a plan, for example, for that beneficiary, for the young boy? How old is he?
I think he's about 22 or 23.
Okay, young man. Do you have a plan then to connect him, to find ways to bring him from being a happy recipient of that benefit of the chair to including him in the work of your organization there?
Yes, absolutely. The plan is basically, I understand he learned how to repair shoes. So what the coordinator is actually going to do is to find out exactly what he needs to be able to repair the shoes that he learned. Then from there, also integrate him into make him maybe like an ambassador of the organization where he'll be able to speak in terms of this is where I used to be and this is where I am to some of his peers and colleagues, while also becoming resourceful, a resource person, you know, because by the time he gets exposed to some of the community resources, you also be a resource person. Like, for example, if somebody's wheelchair is broken, where should that wheelchair be repaired? You will be able to find out, okay, I say, okay, this is where you can repair the wheelchair and all that, giving them all those information. So we also have planned maybe the third stage. After the second stage, the third one is to integrate him with the organization where he becomes a part, not just a beneficiary or a recipient, but he becomes a source and a tool for others also.
So that's part of the thing there, is for you to think through that process and what does he need at each of those stages to transition from one to the next. And you're asking him to speak on behalf, to support him, you know, building a, you know, if he repairs shoes, then he could even help teach others how to repair. I mean, there are a number of different ways. But then there's that process of bringing him along from being simply a recipient and not just, as you noted, not just, you know, a charity case, to where he becomes part and parcel of a whole system of expanding the capacity building of those people on the ground there. And of course, a natural consequence of that is he's going to, I'm confident that he'll speak well of the organization. It's just kind of natural. Yeah. So when you begin to see them as your allies and look at how you can bring them all the way along, that then lots of other things can gradually, maybe quickly, unfold into new plans and possibilities. Very good.
I can go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. interns and volunteers. I guess like where they're coming from is, yeah, anyway, it was, I'm still trying to like formulate the arc, but you know, it's usually young women who are coming to us,
mm-hmm.
or they're really interested in international affairs. They're really interested in becoming, having a career in international affairs and want to be part of the international community. And so our interns come because they want access and they want to have a space to work at the United Nations representing. Usually they're also passionate about something related to women, obviously. We also have had a few young men in the years, so that's one of the things. So, but it usually, in general, women's organizations tend
right.
to...
Right. but not always.
Not always. And then I guess like what brings them in, what makes them want to apply tends to be our approach of internships. A lot of women, like it's not, I think it needs to be clarified. It needs work, but in general, people like the idea that we're creating mutually beneficial experiences for them. Where because the internship isn't super like standardized or anything, they really have the creative space to make it what they need it to be in order to get college credit, which is a big thing.
Right.
And also allows them to be creative. So it really attracts a certain type of person who's really independent and who really like knows what they want out of the internship, rather than someone who's usually like a freshman or someone who kind of wants to be guided. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of person that usually comes to us. And what makes us unique, what they learn through working with us is kind of, yeah, this approach that we take to the United Nations. And this is the part that needs to be clarified, is like to really be able to hone in and really show how we're unique. I think because in our approach to the issues that we focus on at the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to be talking about isn't necessarily what is currently, but is what I imagine. Okay. and the point of view of the founder on these issues in a way that's really compelling and inspiring. And then how to involve them. So it's, you know, they have their regular internship piece, but then how to involve them while they're doing their internship is to, you know, connect them to the monthly or biweekly meetings, status meetings between the three UN offices. So they get to connect to the other offices, other interns there. And in that way, even sometimes collaborate on different projects together. Like for instance, the Vienna intern and the Geneva intern right now created like a youth initiative with Women's Federation. They completely created it and they had their first event, inaugural event, a couple of weeks ago. And also one of them got involved in like a Women's Federation curriculum that's happening. So those kinds of things happen. And then they're also, they can get involved in like writing articles for Women's Federation. They're involved in committees at the United Nations, learning all these things. So those are different just areas of engagement based upon their interests. And then the kind of experience you need to have to support beyond that is kind of, well, what I want to see is that they get to a point by the end of their internship where they're very clear about, like, they're much more familiar with how the UN works and how things happen, and are also very clear about what Women's Federation's positions on these things are, and are inspired by that fact. And so because of that, want to continue, you know, engaging, whether it be, you know, creating their own side, parallel inside events as representatives of Women's Federation in their own time, or just kind of like constantly volunteering in some capacity with the office still, and engaging. And there was one other thing and I can't think what it was. Oh, and also just like, because they're inspired by it, wanting to share that with like their peers, right? To generate more kind of word of mouth recognition and stuff.
Good. So having this sense that there is this arc and development of and levels of engagement and going from interest and curiosity to a point where they are willing to make a commitment, because now they really see, feel, and understand through that experience. Has that been, you know, a useful thought process for you in terms of clarifying what the what the intern's office can offer?
I think so, because usually we get stuck on the part where it's like we get interest because they can focus on what they're interested in. We're really good about that, right? And I think that's where we get stuck, is like figuring out, okay, from that point, where to engage so that they can be exposed to.
Right. So, and in a way, it's as simple as saying, well, how do we get them from here to there? I mean, it's not really rocket science. It's just that people don't do it. And even when people know that they should do it, they often don't do it. And then they don't schedule it. And then they don't have it as one of their OKRs, and then it doesn't happen. You know? So it's, again, a lot of this stuff is actually, luckily, it's very simple. If it was too complicated, nobody would do it. But it is actually quite simple. But there are just key things, is follow the line of thought all the way through to the conclusion. Do you really want to engage? Do you really want to get people totally behind you and on fire? Then make a path for them. Make sure you schedule it in your program so that you can help them get every step of the way. That's your responsibility to them. I mean, well, it's your responsibility. Actually, it's your responsibility for your organization to have that system there. Your responsibility to them is to be accountable, help them you know, help them in your process of saying, you know, here, this is an opportunity. Here, now you can do this. Now you can do, you can't make them do that, go that journey. But unless you've got that, unless you're being responsible on behalf of the organization for putting that in place, then you can't treat them with that respect and accountability that is, look, you can move along, you can do more, you can do more, you can accomplish more, you can become more of an impact, high impact person yourself when you go this path. Mm-hmm. And so your responsibility for the organization is to set up these systems. And then your responsibility to the individuals is more one of accountability and giving them that opportunity and asking them questions. Do you want to join us for this? Will you come in? When are you going? You know, that's, and you're not, you know, they're free to say yay or nay, but it's your responsibility to get out there and to say, give them this call to action. Let them know that this is an option. Inform them, you know, all the way along the line. But when you do this understanding that they've got a journey, then you can see where your responsibility lies in providing those connecting points. You're not asking them to take a stride that is too big that nobody's going to take. Then how many people are going to go from the stage where they're just slightly curious and interested to the point where they're, yes, go Women's Federation. It's unlikely that's going to happen. So, you know, as much as we'd like it to be that easy, snap out the fingers, all that sort of stuff. But that's your responsibility for the, or, you know, that's the responsibility for, and then your responsibility to them as human beings, you know, is to be help them, help with their accountability in the organization. And it's their choice. And, you know, if somebody doesn't want to work with Women's Federation, you're not going to force them to. You can't. Good luck. You know, too much energy involved in that. But creating the opportunity for them to really get 100% engaged, yes, that is your responsibility.
So I struggled a little.
Yep.
But
good.
I found, realized that, in the journey that you, I forgot the word, but the journey that you mapped, that's, yep. We're, with the allies, we're kind of past the challenge part because we're facing towards the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
So the journey would be more like to prove to them and to show them that we want to work as a team. We don't want them to be just service providers.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are going to ask specific questions to create a questionnaire to calculate the emissions, we're going to make them part of, they can take part in creating the questionnaire.
Yeah.
And when we are elaborating the strategy, we can go to them to elaborate the part that they're involved in. So we wouldn't be asking anything new of them other than the work that they already doing. We want to amplify that and just maybe create a communication channel that they didn't have before in order to work as one and not two separates. So we would have to involve them in the process in order for them to make the decision to create the channel, the communication channel, and have a good experience.
Right. So, and in you're speaking about the client, the potential client.
The allies.
Your service providers, your...
The foundations, the local companies, or local food vendors, not big supermarkets, or the companies that recycle or that handle trash, separate types of garbage.
So I guess part of what you need to help me understand a little bit more. When you say you've got your local vendors, is so again, your project here, your program, your business is to set up, can you go over again? I guess I'm not really clear enough on your kind of your overall business plan or your business.
The idea is to create a consulting company.
Okay.
To offset the carbon footprint.
Okay.
That focused on events. So right. The idea is to calculate the emissions, and in order to neutralize them, we need to plant trees. We are planning to do this through foundations. We have to separate the trash as best as we can in order to recycle what it's possible to recycle or reuse, or handle it correctly and not like just let it
all in.
Yeah. Burn. And also to have as much local products as possible. Like, for example, if it's a concert and the artist wants coconut water, instead of buying coconut water from Costco, there's a Mexican company that sells it. And right. It's a small company, and we can get it from them instead.
As a consultant, you are going to then reach out to the artists.
Are going to reach out to the promoters, to the producing companies.
Okay. And then they take you on as a consultant for their artists.
Yeah. Okay. And also we are contemplating corporate events.
Right.
And that way we can work also the producing company that makes the event can be an ally, and we can be in like for the company that's hosting the event, maybe like their Christmas party, we will be like an additional service. And the company that's producing the entire event can also have some earnings from that.
So again, just for clarification, so then you become like, you've got the company that the main companies that organize these events, mm-hmm. and then you become an option of that larger company for those who want to do things to reduce their carbon footprint. So then you would be the consultants who would come on to help that process happen for that event.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. I'm a little bit more clear now than what I was before. Thank you.
Yeah. Main idea.
Yeah. So then you're at the moment, your stakeholders are, you're talking about those that would be working with you, like on the trash recycling, the coconut water providers, and all of the other vendors that you would have then as to say, this is an alternative way to you going to Costco when you want to really do this carbon footprint thing, and so that then you can promote yourself as a socially responsible organization or entertainer, whatever. Yeah. Got it. Cool. So I'm more clear now about your what you're doing there. Your arc again, just if you would go over that with me again.
Talking about the, say, the vendors and our allied companies.
Yep.
We would have, since we're already going, like, facing to the same goal, so it would begin with presenting them the project, because there are already some producing companies that are sustainable in their own, in their own sense. But this gives them a chance to work with any event who has an interest in being sustainable. Mm-hmm. So we would begin with, when we have to create like a questionnaire, a brief, to standardize with all of our clients so they can fill out and we can calculate their emissions. So we would make them part, an active part on creating a questionnaire to have the right information that they need. Mm-hmm. And also once we have like the brief from the client, from the event, we would involve them in the planning of the strategy.
So then you've got, you're talking about two groups here. You've got all of your vendors, and you have to gather all the information through you've got to get that clarity as to how they can reduce the footprint by utilizing their particular component, right? Mm-hmm. And then you just said also with the clients who are using the event provider, developing a strategy with them, was that?
Develop the strategy with the vendors also. Okay. Like, since they are going to be the ones that are going to handle the trash, that are going to recycle, that are going to plant the trees, develop the strategy with them. That way we work as a team and not as, like, I'm hiring you for your services and that's it.
So a strategy as a team, do you mean like developing a partnership agreement?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because you're not going to go and move the trash around. You're just going to be pulling them in. You're going to be kind of like an aggregator of sorts, pulling together a certain group of people who do actually do the work. But collectively, then you can provide a unique service to the other clients. Yeah. So you've got to do that. So there, your journey for those, your vendor stakeholders, just to try to, because sometimes when you say clients, I get confused between the clients of the
client would be the event itself.
Yeah. So not the event client, but the vendor client, the vendor folk.
Yeah.
Here, this is just language and clarity. So then you've got to start with them where they don't know who you are or what you do. And yeah, you'll eventually get your brand and maybe eventually you'll get known and all of that sort of stuff. But at the moment, you begin with people. You have to look for people who are interested in being involved in that kind of low, carbon footprint issue. Not everybody is. And then you have to take them from, oh, you're a possibility, to how they would agree to work with you. And in fact, if they come across anybody who they happen to know, they may be an individual, but then that they would ideally refer others back to you themselves, right?
Yeah.
For events. Mm-hmm. So you've got to take them from that place where they first encounter you, and you want to, and your surveying process can be one of those first stages as they begin to get to know you. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to take them to the space where they've had an experience with you and they're totally committed to what you're doing, supportive and whatever. So was that the journey that you were looking at?
Yeah, with a little more detail into how to get them more involved, being transparent in our processes and involving them in all of the process, not just in the beginning and the end.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it has to be. Yeah. Wonderful. So that's the stuff you've been thinking about already.
Yeah. We have talked about this, me and my associate, but we haven't put it like down on paper.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of this stuff, down on paper, but anyway, having the clarity of that, of where to take them, and the fact that you're going to bring them, just being aware that you're going to bring them on that journey. Anyway, that's great, because I think the clearer you are about that's part of what you have to do is bring them from encountering you. And sometimes it's as simple as getting back to them any number of times so that they start to be familiar with you, get to know you, get to trust you, and then you can actually bring them some business down the road, then that will all feed into that loop. Yeah. Yeah. Good. But again, I guess the main thing that I wanted to stress, and you won't have to listen to me for too much longer, guys, but is that there is this journey and they do need assistance along this journey. And it is good to be aware of that, because once, even just being aware of it, then you start naturally, you almost naturally start to do things a little bit differently. And don't forget to, all along the way, it's a little bit more natural in that kind of a situation where you'll reach them to the point where that endpoint is going to be, you want to make an agreement with them that they will be a vendor and these are the conditions. And when you sell, you'll figure out your partnership agreement with that and how that all works out. And you'll have your legal agreements and all of that sort of stuff down the road. But yeah, taking them from that point of curiosity to completion. What will that take? Cool. Very good. Hey, so I do better understand. I had broad brushstrokes of understanding of what you had before, but I'm much more clear now. I think that's wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Cute little, good little niche that you're working on. Yeah. Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Fernanda.
Yes. Well, in my case, I choose as my stakeholders young women. I know I need to define or to think like more clearly on which type of young women I will be working with. Yeah. So I think that will be something I need to work on and to decide what do I wanna do with them and what are they needs and how do I wanna help them. So how I thought about the journey was first get to talk to them to understand their needs and concerns, mm-hmm. by providing them a safe space where they can share their thoughts. That in order to understand their resources and their limitations. Mm-hmm. Then once I know which are their resources, I will be able to provide them with other useful tools to give them the opportunity to obtain new learning. I want them to start digging and innovating on what else they can be doing. I will be working on creating moments where they can interact with other people and where they can convince themselves of the relevance they have and the importance of thinking to overcome themselves. And in that way, I will be able to create a community of support and encouragement where they can share their achievements and their stories, and they can get constant feedback on what they are doing, and maybe get some hints on what else they can do, maybe network with other people, and to be able to continue growing their projects, their ideas, or even themselves. So that's kind of the journey I thought about.
So I hear you, there's the initial stage, and then there's getting interaction, and then the formation of community, which a safe community, whatever. My question, as I heard you speaking about that, is in terms of the objective for this group, of course, the precise, because young women is a big group, about half of the world, but you narrow it down, and I'm sure you mean more in Mexico, but even there's, are you looking at helping, young women who are interested in developing certain skills in terms of their career, are they looking at personal effectiveness skills? Are you looking at people who have had some social issues, challenges, traumas? Are you narrowing down your group at all? Are you looking at that? Because at the end, part of what is important is to be able to give people an understanding of where they can be themselves, what their future self can be. So an effective woman in the world, you might be thinking of woman leaders. So you might hold up, find well, a amazing women in Mexico. You might find amazing, you know, internationally women as your goals and objectives. But I was just curious about, are you thinking career, educational, you know, which sphere?
Well, I think I'm thinking on students, maybe high school students or college students. Because in Mexico, the rate of students that once they have finished their high school continue with a professional career really drops down in women. So I may want to think, well, I would like to work with them in order for them to know that they have other opportunities, but also that if maybe they won't have the resources to have like a formation, like to go to a greater university or like a particular or a public instead of another kind of university, well, type of university, to let them know that they can make some changes in their community and that they can be working maybe on smaller projects for them to feel that they are really making a change and then growing themselves and thinking on how important it is for them to continue learning and to continue growing in order for them to be able to share more with their community. So I will be thinking on students like high school or college students that would like to have social projects or that are thinking on how to make a social impact on their community, like their local community, even though it may be a small one or a bigger one, just to make them sure that first they need to continue with their studies in order for them to be better to be able to talk with other people, to make them not feel like less than others. And then once they have like these elements that they can be working on a small project, so they will be that they can be like change makers on their community.
So the things that would attract them to what you're thinking of would be, that they could be change makers in their community. The kind of the back door of this is continue education. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it seems like you're not going to go in the front door is not going to be keep going with your education as much as this is what you can do. This is the difference you can make. Let's do this. Oh, by the way, it's really important that you keep learning and educating, and then you get them very connected to that process as a natural part of them seeing that their personal development and capacity to be those change makers that really drive them is that they're going to keep on learning one way or another, and then you provide them. Okay.
So exactly. Yeah. I think that what I want, well, or what I have seen like in the last months is that here in Mexico, for example, really young women are moving on the streets and they are trying to call attention from our leaders and our politicians, and they are really they really want to make change, but sometimes that just feels, or they may think that that's just one way and that education is the other. Right. Like if they really want to work on something, or they have learned that maybe their parents told them like they need to work like when they are really, really young, and they start thinking that, okay, so I have a job or I'm working on something or I'm making something. But if you really want to make a change, if you really want to make a really great impact, you need to be prepared. And that will give you more tools in order for you to assess what you really want. So that would be like the way I would like to start convincing them, I'm talking with them to be able to make this change of mind.
So then the concept of their future self is as change makers, as people who are really making a difference. And it doesn't matter where you come from. Education then is a very essential part for everybody. And whether it's formal or informal, we've got to constantly educate ourselves. So yeah, anyway, cool, very cool. So as you see, yeah, and what's important there and what I just tried to draw out there is just to differentiate between sometimes what really needs to happen isn't enough of a carrot in front of people. You know, if you stand there and say, get an education, mm-hmm. they're going to go, I'm tired of school. I don't want any more education. But to be a change leader, yes, you know, and to inspire and to speak to them as those change leaders. And then it's very natural, you know, can you do this? And this will help you to do this. And this will allow you to do that. And you build this skill and this capacity, then you can really be amazing. Yeah. So just differentiating there in terms of how you help bring people along that experience to your goal and objective is to keep people educated and moving forward. But sometimes the ways to do that, you know, it's a little bit of like putting the bait on the hook. And it's probably the wrong analogy, but, you know, but you do kind of need to get people interested in something. And then, you know, because we don't always want to be a good business leader. What do you really need? You really need to understand financials and financial budgeting. And that's one thing you do have to know sooner or later. Mm-hmm. Most people, do you want to go and become the best business budgeter in the world? Maybe not. It's not what's going to inspire people to do what is needed to be able. And part of what is needed is to be able to, you know, raise funds, do the things that you need to do and get all of that stuff going. But your purpose and your objective is something that is much more human oriented, you know, aspirationally oriented, because in the end, that's the goal. Wonderful. Wonderful, Fernanda. I certainly hope that anything that we have gone over in these couple of days will help even little bits and pieces here and there with your work and everybody's work as you move forward. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you just like a 5-minute bio break, and then it's already 1:30. We've only got another half hour, and I just want to come back and then we'll just have a closing session. Just share our last thoughts, any last questions that there might be. I just want to make one more suggestion as to what to do when you leave here, and then that'll be it. That'll be at the end of our 3 days together. And so 5-minute bio break. See you in 5.